the larger conversation is, do the symbols matter? Like, how much stock are we putting into symbols? Is it just a symbol? Is it more than that?
Welcome to the Misfit Behaviorist Podcast. Join your hosts, Audra Jensen and Caitlin Beltran, here to bring you evidence-based strategies with a student-centered focus. Listen weekly for practical and functional advice, along with actionable tips tailored for ABA professionals, special education teachers, and anyone dedicated to supporting students with diverse needs. Ready? Let's get started.
Hi, everybody. Welcome back to the Misfit Behaviorist Podcast. So in honor of April, we thought we would chat a little bit about April being Autism Awareness / Acceptance Month. And the first thing I wanted to talk about was the origin of the puzzle piece, which used to, when I started out in the field, everyone had the puzzle piece on their bumper, everyone had the puzzle piece pin, and it was seen as like the representation of autism. If you were doing like a charity run or something, it was identifying, we support this cause or organization who's funding autism, anything related to research and movement in the field. But what a lot of people don't know, and I wanted to just bring it up because I have seen some different symbols, and a lot of, I think, nowadays, the puzzle piece is much less popular than it used to be. And so I just wanted to dive into the history for a minute, as a lot of people don't know where it came from. And I want to preface this by saying we totally respect everyone's opinions. I think this is just conversational. We're sharing information, and leave it at that. So I pulled up this little thing and it says, the origins of the puzzle piece, the primary symbol for autism, it goes back all the way to 1963. It was created by Gerald Gasson, a parent and board member for the National Autistic Society in London. The board believed autistic people suffered from a puzzling condition, and they adopted this logo because it didn't look like any other image used for charitable or commercial use. And included with the puzzle piece was an image of a weeping child. And the weeping child was meant to be a reminder that autistic people suffer from their condition. So I think it's important. And if you do that quick Google search, you'll see the original puzzle piece logo did include that figure of a weeping child. Audra, is that something you knew of, how that symbol came to be when you first saw it back in the day?
I knew that it came from the idea of the puzzle idea. I did not know about the weeping child piece because they must have gotten rid of that a long time ago.
I think so. And I'm sure it evolved over time. Right. So I guess the thought being that over time, more recently, there's been a lot of pushback saying the puzzle piece was initially associated with the idea that people with autism were missing something or were incomplete. There's also the thought that nobody who actually had autism was involved in saying, hey, this is the logo that we want to adopt to be the face of our front or something like that. And it does perpetuate, as a lot of people think, that there's like a problem to solve narrative. And not to say there is or there isn't, but just that's the idea when you see this, that like it's a puzzle, it has to be fixed, maybe there needs to be a cure is what could come to mind. So recently, a lot of people have been embracing the idea of, I've seen the infinity symbol a lot, which I love, and taken to mean it represents the infinite possibility, it reflects diverse experiences, it emphasizes acceptance and celebration of neurodiversity. Audra, what do you think about the infinity symbol?
I love it. I think it's great. I love the term neurodiversity. I love the idea of different ways of thinking, different brain plasticity coming at different ideas. I love the idea of infinity. My own son loves math, so that it's a math symbol. I've always been very keen on that. So yeah, I like it.
Yeah. And also the fact that it was chosen by autistic individuals, it has a more positive representation. Like you said, a lot of times I've seen it with that rainbow logo. So it's more emphasizes that acceptance and positivity more. So I did pull up kind of two sides of the coin, and I thought it would be interesting just to see, because I think most people are, and the larger conversation is, do the symbols matter? Like, how much stock are we putting into symbols? Is it just a symbol? Is it more than that? And I think a lot of people are perfectly willing to change the symbols as they come into fashion, and other people do feel really strongly about it. So this one quote I found says, while the original intent of the puzzle piece was positive, it no longer represents the goals of advocacy. Yesterday, autism was a mystery. Today, while efforts continue, the main focus is on applying what we've learned to make society more responsive to changes. Highlighting this shift warrants a newer symbol, one of cooperation and sharing. And that's from Michael Leventhal. Now, the flip side of this, here's a parent, Carrie Bowers, and she writes, and this is just, both of these are just taken as quotations meant to represent different narratives. And she writes, the political correctness of many things is disturbing. It's hard to keep up, actually, as the term flips, first person language. When Taylor was young, I called him an autistic child. Then that became a bad thing. Now it's flipped back from a person with autism to an autistic person, just where I started. A puzzle piece implies a mystery to be solved. Is that untrue in autism? Is that really hurtful, or did we make that up to feel better? I believe my son is a mystery still after almost 26 years, and he's missing certain understandings, skills, and abilities as an autistic person. He would tell you, as he told a group of volunteers yesterday, I just don't get certain things. Is it insulting to imply through imagery a particular truth about him? So Audra, as the mom of an autistic individual, how does that impact you?
Leave
you
it's feeling? Interesting. I had a conversation with him the other day. He is 27. And I don't know if it was you I was talking to or how this came up. But the word cure came up because it's come up off and on over the years. And I asked him, I actually pulled up the text here a second ago. I said, if there was a cure for autism, would you want it? What are your thoughts? And this is what he said. He said, honestly, I don't know. It makes me unique and I'd lose many of my strengths as well as my weaknesses. Now, this is somebody who has had a lot of struggles over his 27 years, lots of depression, anxiety, and even he sees autism as it makes him who he is. He's very much embraces it as part of the good and the bad and a part of who he is. He embraces it. Everything changes over all these years that we've been a part of this. And like the woman was saying, I remember back autistic was the wrong word and then became person first language. Now we're back to identity first. It's all fine with me, whether you want to use, I've talked to him also about the puzzle piece or the infinity piece, whether he likes person first or identity first. And he's always, I don't care. He always says, I don't care. And I pressed him once. I said, if you really had to choose, would you choose identity? And I explained what it was, identity first or person first. And he said, I guess if I had to choose, I'd say I'm a person with autism. Okay. And he said, yeah. I really wouldn't care one way or the other. So I'm like, oh, I'll choose whatever you want to choose. I don't care. I'm like, great.
And that goes to show you too, it's easy sometimes to fall into that polarizing lens that I think social media tends to emphasize, where the community must have one opinion of everyone. And that just simply is never true.
Right.
But it's definitely an easy trap to fall into for sure. I also wanted to mention, and we were chatting before we started, we both follow the Autism Cafe, Eileen Lamb on Instagram, and she posts phenomenal content about her son following his journey, which I think leads me to the next topic we wanted to talk about is just, I don't know what else to call it, except maybe that dark side of autism, like the side of autism that you're not seeing on TikTok, that you're not always seeing on Love on the Spectrum. There's so many wonderful qualities and there's so much joy in learning and being around a person with autism. And then there's the other side where there's huge communication barriers sometimes. There's really intensive needs. There's really aggressive and self-injurious behaviors. Not all the time. I'm not saying these are prevalent with every person with autism. You've met someone with autism, you've met one person with autism, we know. But I've worked with families, with individuals with really aggressive behaviors going on, and it's been so hard for them financially, mentally. And we were just both complimenting her. Again, it's Eileen Lamb, the Autism Cafe. She really just shines a spotlight on the services that are still needed and the journey that so many families are going through. And I think that's important because that population of autistic individuals, they can't speak up about this. Like they can't comment on the puzzle piece. They don't have the communication tools to do so. I find her account really informative and inspirational.
I've also had families that have lost family members to suicide, have lost family members to seizures, to drownings, families who have family members who can't, like you said, advocate for themselves. I had a young man who had severe diabetes, nonverbal, who had pica like Charlie does and would get into his medications and had no ability to control his eating, was extremely dangerous with his medications. Who speaks for them? We have a community who wants to speak for everybody, but who speaks for those children? As I love this. I'm very excited. I don't remember when it comes out, but the documentary that's coming out about Charlie is like, who speaks for Charlie? And so who speaks for those students?
And I think we both feel, having been in the field a little while now, that how different it is, which is amazing in so many ways, but TikTok wasn't a thing like when I first started. So it's, you worry sometimes, and again, I feel like I'm dating myself and I sound like the oldest person in the world, but you worry that the kids are learning this information from these sources, from watching shows and like seeing content on social media. And that's why I'm really glad there's content out there like hers, where, not to say that she has to do it or she should have to do it, but that really shows all sides. Like we said, it's a multifaceted thing. It's not just, this is a one size fits all. It can look like this. It can look like this. It can be really positive sometimes. It can really be not positive sometimes, and sharing that impact on families. Otherwise, that's how change happens, right? We want to see that movement for more and more services, which is so important.
I was just saying, I think somebody's advocating for maybe a third diagnosis or a second diagnosis needs to come out, a severe diagnosis or severe autism diagnosis or something. The autism diagnosis itself has three levels, level 1, 2, and 3. Mm-hmm. I almost think we need to really use that a lot more when we're talking about autism. Are we talking about, my son has level 1, he's able to live independently, he can advocate for himself, he can communicate. A Charlie or some of these nonverbal students who they're level 3, they have significant behaviors. Those students need somebody to advocate for them. And there we have twos who are in the middle. Using that language to communicate where we are, we're talking about very different needs. When we're talking about a level 1, level 2, level 3, very different. And maybe we need to use that language a lot more. And when we're discussing different students that we're working with, different students we have in the community, and maybe we need to use that language more when we talk about it.
Yeah, for sure. I think that's a great point, because we have the leveled system, but I agree, we don't hear it being talked about as much, or at least not in my conversation. So it's something that hopefully maybe we will hear more about, and not that you want to reduce anyone to a label, that's not the intention, but just to say that, just so you are clear, this is level 1 versus level 3, to highlight the need for the support that individual might need. I guess in closing, just, I would love to hear everyone's thoughts. I know autism awareness, autism acceptance, April's a huge month for, we decorate the hallways, we light it up blue. That could be a whole nother topic. Some people don't like lighting it up blue. Some people feel that autism speaks red can be controversial. Yes, I've seen wear red instead. So I love hearing all the opinions. I think change is almost always a good thing and doesn't have to be something that 100% of every people feel on board with. But I just like seeing all the different perspectives and all the different thought that's going into it. I personally do love the Infinity logo. I think it's so warm and accepting. And I feel like if I'm part of any committees or something, I'm trying to steer us in that direction. So I would really love if people want to sound off in the Facebook group, the Misfit Behaviorist podcast, or on Instagram, what your schools are doing, what your communities are doing for April this year.
Mm-hmm. I love that idea as well.
All right. I think that's it for this week. Definitely reach out if you have a topic you would love to hear about, or comment on something that you want to hear more about in the future.
All right. We'll see you guys all next week.
Thanks. See you next week.
Thanks for listening to the Misfit Behaviorists. And be sure to tune in next week for more tips and tricks. Don't forget to subscribe so you don't miss an episode.